out and visits other worlds.
And once again, we're live. Whose phone is always just eating up the mics? It's yours.
It's not mine always, but this time
you are listening to the Wait What If podcast. As always, I'm Kevin Sullivan, your host, followed by the newly elected second Mike Stojic.
Hello.
Followed by our permanent guest, Malia Whittington Christie. Is that your middle name? Whittington?
Whittington.
Whittington. Sounds very royal.
It's my maiden name.
All right. So we have a few things that we're going to talk about today. The first thing I want to share with Mike, first of all, how was you guys' 4th of July?
You were there. You should know.
I know. I was trying to, we're trying to make it.
You sound like aliens.
You sound a little echoey. It's because I have you hooked up with another one. It's fine. It'll come out normal.
Okay.
I hear it too.
Oh, that.
It's like a bah.
That is, we're outside again. I guess I should say that. So we have the bug noises.
We sound like cicadas.
The cicadas, but behind me is also my neighbor's AC unit.
That's what we're hearing, the AC unit.
Yeah.
And it's hot as you two sound like.
It's hot as balls out here. At least underneath the fan, it's nice, but it was really, really humid. All my paperwork here is like, you know when it gets that soggy soft? Mm. So, 4th of July, how was your 4th of July? I'm segueing into this for a reason.
That was such a flaccid joke.
Oh, it was fun.
That I
got it.
Yeah, you did.
I did. But my 4th of July wasn't. My 4th of July was explosive.
Was it?
Mm.
Hold on.
Fun.
Hold on. Would it be anything like this? Mike, tell me what's going on.
We're about to blow stuff up. We've been drinking all day, and now we're going to blow stuff up.
Absolutely. A little alcohol and explosives. This is what 4th of July is all about.
That's exactly what it was about.
Absolutely.
Let me show you the second half of that. So I noticed that the rounds have gone from they've gone from silver to red. What does this mean? Is this more dangerous?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay, because red is the international
color for danger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it is.
So we went from
mediocre danger to high.
Yeah. All right.
This is good.
All your fingers still there?
So far.
All right, good. You can't tell
head.
You have such freakishly small hands.
Off. Right. I do. My freakishly small hands. We're gonna put two kids at the end of a street on bicycles, and they're gonna do
a
Roman candle joust.
I can see that.
And they're gonna come at each other with their Roman candles.
Yeah, so that's how. And then, of course, I'd like to end it off with go ahead.
I was gonna say the kids with the Roman candles were the best part.
Yeah, did they actually hit each other?
Do you know what's
funny? I thought we were joking, but now that you say that, I do remember two kids holding Roman candles. I'm like, wait a minute, there weren't there?
Yeah,
but they didn't really joust. Them to on bicycles.
No, they had the arc going. That was funny. I forgot that was the grand finale, wasn't it?
Yeah, everybody was just holding on to weird things.
And then this is how, of course, it sounded. So how's your 4th of July been?
It's been good.
I see your forehead sweaty. Did you run over here?
Whoa!
I smell burning.
That's my flesh.
Something's falling on us.
So
that was my first attempt at remote live recording. But my favorite part is where we bleeped out the, because I was talking to, that was Forrest. I was talking to him, and then we didn't even realize they were going off, and then boom, it's just turns into Baghdad 2003.
It was a good time. It was totally,
was
it was murkin.
They didn't
really
go up as high as I thought they would. They,
no.
they
Not
blew
at all.
Up like right over the top of our heads.
Yeah.
So the molten shrapnel was falling down on all the kids. Mm-hmm.
I hope
but
this
nobody
is for
lost
my,
an eye or a finger.
Yeah,
it was all
good.
Very good,
that's
clean
good.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember you showed me your drink and there was just all this stuff floating in it. And you're like, will this give me cancer? I'm like,
Not any more than the microwaves
else.
And the plastics
everything
and everything else.
Yeah. So I wanted to share that with our international audience so they can appreciate the absolute festivity of 4th of July. I love 4th of July.
That's fun. That was my favorite, I think, of all my, look at my watch, 33 years. That was probably my favorite.
You keep your age in your watch.
Your watch
I do.
Tells you that?
Uh-huh. It's a smart.
Damn.
It's a smart. I got it. It was only $15.
Smart phone.
But it does a good job of it.
I remember as a kid, we used to wake up early, and with my cousin, we used to go out. He was like 3 or 4 years older than me, so he was the one that could get his hands on, like, cherry bombs and all the things. As a kid, everything's a cherry bomb, and you mm-hmm. always want them. And we would just go out all day. It was like all day you just blew stuff up. It was great. Yep. Good memories.
Poppets. That's all my dad would let me hold.
Those little pieces of paper.
Well, because my dad was just a pyromaniac, and he just wanted to set everything off himself. He'd be like, here's some poppets. Happy 4th of July. Get out of here.
Those are like...
sucks.
Those are like the methadone for fireworks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's always the weaker version. So what were we going to talk about this week? I had a couple things on my mind. The first thing was we like to talk about the bigger things that are going on in the world. And one of which is by the year 2050 or maybe it's 2025, give or take, I guess, a decade. There's going to be 9 billion people on the planet. 9 billion, that's a lot. When we were born in the 70s, it was like, I think like 4 billion, 3 billion.
Speak for yourself, old man.
Hey, when were you born? Oh, you guys are born in the 80s?
80.
I was 81.
Oh, okay. So never mind, you young people.
Well, 80s babies.
I was technically 76, by which I mean it was in the year 76, so I guess it's not technical, it's literal and technical. But it was the last week of 76, so I kind of throw myself in the 77s. You know why? Do you know why? I'm 38, but I realize next year I'm turning 40. How the hell does that work? Ooh. How does that work? I should have 2 more years ahead of me, and next year I turn 40?
How does that happen? Is it? That's weird.
There's a wormhole next year. It's like a leap year. Yeah, next year's a wormhole.
Mm, yeah.
It's not easy.
Next year, I turn 25, so...
There you go.
Mm. Imagine that.
It's comedy because it's so obviously not...
Well, I don't know.
I'm joking. All right, so I'm going to play, the population of Earth is growing, and of course there's things that we're I guess, concerned about. You never think about, so when you eat beef or you eat chicken and you eat, you know, grains and whatever, you don't realize that there's a large portion of natural resources and byproducts that come from, say, just one steak. So one piece of beef takes a lot to grow. So are we going to run out of food? You know, I don't think that's so much an issue. It's what we're doing to where we live and the environment that it tends to be a bigger issue. And so scientists are coming up with different ways to meet that demand of a growing population. And one of the ways of doing that is growing meat in a petri dish, growing it in the lab. And when I first heard that, I'm like, I don't know. Let's listen to this real quick, and then we'll talk about it.
The world uses billions of animals for meat every year, and the act of actually raising them has a huge impact on the environment. When you have factory farms, as we do in the United States, they produce vast amounts of actual manure and waste that can create serious air pollution, water pollution, and create greenhouse gases that can affect climate change. And the demand for meat is only expected to continue to increase. One estimate suggests that we could need 60% more meat by 2050 for the entire world. So scientists have actually been looking at a way, instead of growing a whole animal the way you would in a farm, actually growing meat tissue in labs, or what's known as in vitro meat. The idea basically would be that you would take some stem cells from a pig, from a chicken, from a cow, culture it in a lab, and then grow it using a gross serum that contains proteins, amino acids, sort of grow it as a steak, sort of add in some other ingredients, some fat, and actually create just the meat itself. For vegetarians, this could be a big change because you don't have the issue of raising and then killing animals. In fact, PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, has actually put forward a $1 million prize, the first scientist that's going to be able to produce a commercial lab-grown burger. We have scientists who are getting very close in the lab to creating pilot projects. There's a scientist in the Netherlands named Mark Post, who's probably farthest along, who's really only a few months away from creating what would be really the first lab-grown burger. Problem is that burger is going to cost right now hundreds of thousands of dollars because it's still very much in the pilot scale. So if we don't want to change our lifestyle, if we don't want to change our consumption habits, we're probably going to have to augment the meat we grow now with something that could be grown in a lab. And the result could be good for the planet, good for the animals themselves, and potentially good tasting, provided those scientists can actually figure out how to make a lab-grown burger taste like a regular one.
So what do you think?
You can never... Just the claim that it's going to taste like... A burger.
It's got to, though, right? I mean, if it's the same, it's the same proteins, it's the same,
No, because if you're growing it in a petri dish, all it is the stem cells of what muscle tissue. There's no inherent flavor. It doesn't grow flavor.
Yeah, you're growing like a beef flavor. Or I think what you would miss is, so your meat tends to taste like the food that they eat. So if you ever had a grass fed animal versus like a crane fed animal.
I'm sorry to sound like such a snob here, but that's the red meat that we eat.
The grass fed. Yeah.
We try to err on the side of that.
Well, it's what they naturally eat. It's what cows are supposed to eat. They're not supposed to eat.
But now it's a primo product. Now it costs so much, and because that's not the norm anymore.
Well, it's cheaper to use the grains. It's cheaper to use corn, so you can just slosh out 50,000 pounds of feed and just have all the cows come up and eat it, and obviously it drives down the price.
Corn is king.
Mm-hmm. But then the meat, everything. I mean, it gets some fat because corn is just sugar. So it gets the cow's fat. I think something that you would see a difference in is, so yeah, obviously if it's not eating grass, but it's also not walking around, it's not bumping into things. You know, the meat isn't curing, I guess, like a normal meat would, right?
Right.
What do you think, Mike?
I definitely don't think it's going to taste the same. I don't know how it could, even with artificial flavoring. Artificial cheese flavored things don't taste like real cheese.
Yeah. I think I heard jerky. Like jerky is kind of the closest
to what? To
the closest. Like they're gonna have to flavor it just the way they do like beef jerky. It's
There's no way it could. I shouldn't say there's no way. I suppose in sometime in the future, but the artificial flavoring is something that I don't think we've 100% figured out. Mm-hmm. We try to get things to taste sweet because it's what we're biologically drawn to is sweet things, mm-hmm. or sometimes salty things, or the fat taste,
mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of what your body needs. And our bodies haven't evolved much. Our minds certainly have, but our bodies are the same bodies we've had as Neanderthals.
Mm-hmm.
So we still crave sugars, sweets, fats.
Well, yeah,
to use as energy. And then, so what you find is with a lot of products, they intentionally heighten the sensation of sweet or that flavor of sweet. So you're more addicted to it.
Sure.
But I don't know if they could really do that with meat. Maybe because with the case of meat, it would probably have to be more of a fatty flavor.
Yeah.
Because you would eat the fat, the store of the fat, to use as energy because it's a type of carbohydrate, or if carbohydrates are turned to fat. But I don't know if it could ever taste the same. And I don't know if I'd ever. I mean, because you look at like organic, like you said, the grass fed, the grain fed, but like organic, free range, grass fed stuff tastes so much better than the stuff that's been locked in a cage its entire life and just shoved corn down its throat.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
So, like I mean, there's a difference if you really take the
grass.
You take the time, and if you prepare it properly and you cook it properly, you should be able to taste the difference.
There's hunters out there that'll specifically hunt. These are like the guys who are really deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
Certain times of the year, obviously, with the seasons, but also specifically certain times of the year with like bear meat. Apparently bear meat's really good if they're eating lots of berries at the time. Like if they're eating blueberry and they're from a blueberry rich area, they'll kill the bear and it actually will taste, you'll catch that hint of blueberry in it. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah. I guess when it comes down to it, and if you're looking at it for sustainability, because our population is going to hit 9 billion and then probably soon it'll be 18 billion because it's exponential growth, I think. If that's the case and you're just doing it for substance, then who cares what it tastes like at the end of the day? It's kind of like, I think of it almost like our MREs, you know, they taste terrible, but you're not eating them because they taste good. You're eating them because it's energy and it's protein and you get the salts and it's just a ton of calories. Mm-hmm. It's just to get you through because of how physically intense training is. So it's like, here's eat this because it's going to keep you going.
Eat the salt block.
It doesn't really matter what it tastes like. Feed.
The only part really of the experiment now is the, you know, laboratory engineered meat. Even once that becomes available, you think everyone's not still going to, and even more so, opt for the Cheetos and the Pop-Tarts? Like, hey, we can grow something potentially healthy for us, that, that, you know, our carbon footprint will be a little smaller. And people are like, yeah, but I still want to have, you know, my Eggo waffles and my
You'd be surprised fries. At how little people know about diet and exercise. It's, I mean, it's, I see so many patients a day for weight loss and stuff. And there's literally just, and by no fault of their own, there's just a lack of knowledge about what is healthy to eat. And the questions I'll be asked, I'm like, really? You know, like, can I drink Mountain Dew? And it's like, no. no, you cannot. The biggest thing I tell people, and I say, if you're obese, if you're overweight, consider yourself having diabetes. Just live your life like you have diabetes, because you're going to get it. So you might as well start living like it now, and you're going to feel better. And you don't take a day off. Diabetics can't take a day off. They can't say, oh, Christmas, I'm going to eat a whole cake and a whole pie.
I got to tell you about a friend of mine.
Well,
he's older.
Real quick, what I tell people, though, is that if you pick it or kill it, you can eat it. And you don't have to really kill it or pick it. But, I mean, go to the grocery store and be like, can I kill that? And you can't kill an Oreo. But you can kill a chicken. You can pick a...
You can crush some Oreos, that's right.
Murder the
great
Oreos.
Oreo killer. But, and it's just, and if you follow that rule, if, and then for liquids, it's milk or water. That's it. And if you follow those rules, it's, you're going to lose the weight and you're going to get healthy. I mean, it's a very simple fact. We completely lost touch on what our bodies need. Like you said earlier, our bodies really haven't changed over the last, 50,000 years, but our society has grown exponentially.
We're given choices. We're given choices, well, it's easy. Have to know what we need to survive.
And it's super easy to get food right now. And it's super easy to get the stuff that's been modified that tastes really good.
Genes.
They trick it because they put all these flavor enhancers in these products like Oreos, and all of a sudden that tastes so much better than a fresh apple. You know, so you're going to go straight to the Oreos because you're going to get some instant satisfaction, where in the apple you may not. Because
take a Coca-Cola. You got caffeine. Caffeine is a diuretic. You've got there's salt in Coca-Cola, right? So
a lot.
So it makes you thirsty. So you're peeing and drinking. There's sugar. Mm-hmm. Sugar causes an insulin release. Insulin hijacks the sugar, puts it into fat, causes your blood sugar to drop, and it stops. There's these chemical processes. One's called ghrelin. One's called leptin. But it reduces the ability for those chemicals to go to your brain and tell you that you've eaten. So you take a kid, you give him 200 calories at McDonald's, and he's still hungry. Mm-hmm. And that's just with the soda. And then he goes and eats everything else. And it's just, you're right, empty. It's a trick.
And especially when you get a 20-piece chicken nugget for $5.
Yeah, yeah.
They're ordering those by
family pack.
Yeah.
Just death.
Just crushing nuggets.
You were going to say something, you had a story about
a friend. You're talking about that live like a diabetic. He's 50-something, maybe in his 60s. And he loves the Waffle House, and he's a big overweight guy, and he's also got some level of diabetes. I can't remember what level it is.
Mike, your story keeps getting interrupted.
I know.
So Cara brought out, we're talking right now.
God.
This is good.
So good.
Chocolate chip chicken nuggets.
No. See,
no?
We're talking about whole foods and eating like that. Oh, actually, we're talking about laboratory meats, but right here we have, Cara, you tell us what's in it.
There are raisins, chocolate chips.
There are chocolate chips.
Just a couple.
A little bit.
It's three ingredients: raisins, bananas, and oatmeal. And then I did add a little bit of cinnamon.
Okay.
And chocolate
Perfect.
Chips.
And chocolate chips in yeah.
Five is the new three.
Right.
Okay. We won't say anything about the chocolate chips,
no,
but
a variety.
Carob.
A little variety.
But there's no
no sugar.
No sugar. No flour.
Eggs.
No eggs, sugar, flour,
and they're good. Try one. She's got. I want to hear crunching over the.
A little bit of chocolate's not bad. I mean, moderation, man.
This is fine. This is
dark chocolate's actually pretty good for you.
Dark chocolate, yeah.
Dark chocolate's real good.
Milk chocolate is sugar,
but dark chocolate is.
Yeah,
you know,
so moderation.
Say, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. a little color in there.
This guy
flavor.
This guy, I don't know how much longer he's going to make it, and it's pretty sad because he's overweight. He's like in his late 50s or early 60s, and he eats at the Waffle House all the time. And I feel bad
Does he listen to the show?
But he won't. No.
Okay. Good.
But I don't. He doesn't know what a podcast is. He's one of those guys. So, because I really like the guy, I respect him quite a bit, and I try to tell him, but he won't listen. He's like, you know what? It's my one life. I'm going to do it. But the thing is so I go with him to the Waffle House, and this is before I knew he had a problem. So he crushes this whole meal, this huge Waffle House-y meal, and he has one of his pins, the diabetic. What are those pins?
Insulin pins. He dials up his insulin.
He dials it in, and I guess these pins you crank up or crank down. Depending on.
They make it real easy now.
He sits there. He cranks it all the way up after he crushes this whole meal, lifts his shirt, and sticks him right in the stomach to deliver the insulin. And I was like, Jesus, what did you just do? And then he explained how he's a diabetic, and I'm like, you shouldn't be eating this stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm good because this pen levels everything out.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but that's not the way it's supposed to work,
I know,
man.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's good because as long if I eat all this and I crank this up to this, I'm good. I'm level again. And I was man.
What I'll say to patients like that is, you know, you have a lot of them that say, you're right, that's my life, and I'm going to live the way I want. And
it's true.
You're like that. And yeah, and absolutely. Especially as a libertarian, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. However, having a heart attack and dropping dead isn't the worst thing that can happen. You can have a stroke. You can lose – diabetics lose their limbs. Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty disease. You can go on dialysis. Your kidneys can shut down. He can go blind. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible disease.
I'm sorry.
He's eating into the microphone.
You're talking about horrible stuff. And it is. It's very horrible. But I just tried one of these cookies. And these cookies are so good.
But so you I'm will like, not get, you, during right, so the break, you missed, so you will weird. Not get diabetes.
It's weird. I'm like, oh, yeah. So good. And you're telling me this terrible story, but I'm like, these cookies are so good.
Yeah. These are good for you.
Yeah, these are, there's no sugar. It's oatmeal, banana, and raisins.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. They're paleo.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean it as like a hypocritical thing. It was like you're saying bad news, and here I am like, really feeling good about what I'm eating.
Yeah.
Like Cookie Monster voice. It was, damn diabetics.
He finishes that. He starts eating the microphone.
It's dark. I might not tell the difference.
We'll know which one's your mic next week. We'll be like, this one smells like chocolate. Oh, yeah, there is a couple
there's
in chocolate.
There's a chunk taken out of the phone. Ones you have diabetes and there's so much information. It's self-inflicted. There's so much information. How many billions of dollars go into funding research and you know, educating people? And they're like, right, yeah, and I've got it. I'm getting it. I've got it. And I want the Big Mac.
What we do is, it's one of those diseases which is a tragedy in a couple of different ways. We blame the person, and it's really not their fault. I know it sounds easy to say it's their fault to stop eating, but the way that the sugars, and it's mainly a sugar, it's a sugar issue. The way it messes with your body, it shuts down, like I said, it shuts down your body's ability to make leptin and ghrelin, which are the chemicals that cause satiety. It hijacks the sugar. So your body's pumping out all this insulin. It burns out your pancreas. It's kind of one way that type 2 diabetes starts. You also get a resistance to the insulin. So your body's filling up with this insulin, and that insulin's taking the sugar and it's storing it as fat. It's what insulin does. Mm-hmm. It's a transporter. It allows the sugar to go to your brain so you can think, go to your muscles, and then it especially brings it into the fat for storage. And then your blood sugar drops, and then you get hungry again. So yeah, it's and you know, I work in medicine. I just hate to blame.
I don't think it's anyone's fault. I just think that there's so much choice out there, and I think it's the big business, and I think it's the pharmaceutical companies, and I think it's the farmers and the growers, and of course I
think it's education too. It's re-educating a society and how we're raised and how we see things.
I definitely agree with the education piece.
You give all the choices, and you can't make people take the education. You're like, well, here, I'll give you a choice of something you can microwave. You walk into the grocery store and all the better for you items are around the outskirts. Mm-hmm. You walk into the middle, and the entire middle section, biggest section.
I mean, it's terrible.
It's just a free for all.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I don't think it's all of. I don't think anyone's ever 100% to blame, but I certainly think there's a percentage there. Because I've talked to folks before. Usually, I see them in the gym. And we just generally strike up conversations, and I'm usually told they want to lose weight. They know what they need to do, but here's a list of excuses why I don't do it.
Yeah.
Right. And that, I mean, it was surprisingly, that's generally the chat that I have with folks when they're asking for different types of advice on like lifting or working out. I'll tell them, and they're like, yeah, no, I know that. You know, I pretty much know what I need to do. It's just, you know, here's a bunch of excuses why I don't do it. But I also understand the dependency piece with the sugars and those sorts of things, because it's a chemical brain trick. Mm-hmm. But you can train yourself out of that. I mean, it's a discipline thing, it's tough to do by yourself. But if you're in a good group, good support group, or you have a good mentor or coach, I mean, you can. There's a lot of good that you can do on your own or with somebody, or maybe just start a group.
Isn't that crazy to talk the way you're talking about it? If someone is just tuning in, you wouldn't think that what we're talking about right now is just eating to live. That sounds. I mean, you really have to work at it.
Sure.
You're bombarded with the hunter gatherer
stuff.
You know, era of our existence. You know, it wasn't like you had to try to eat healthy. You were lucky if your ass ate at all.
Do you know what a duvet is?
It's a blanket.
What does
Why
it mean
do
to us?
Why do people like you and I know what a duvet is? It's a blanket. In the hunter-gatherer sense of the word? Oh, listen. Martha Stewart's polishing the china on the Titanic, yeah, man. It's all going down.
It's a Fight Club reference.
I don't remember.
Martha Stewart.
Wait, have you watched the movie Fight Club?
Yeah, but years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in high school. You were also in high school.
It's well.
I was.
I watched it
you were probably graduating.
I just got Vietnam at the time.
Yeah.
You were born in Vietnam, weren't you?
Yeah.
You started it.
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
That's all right.
The racist one over here is talking.
She is. Well, she's a whole bottle of wine in.
No, that's a glass. It's a glass.
You're multiple. You have a glass left. You're not a glass in. You have a glass left out of the bottle.
Half empty, half full. I like to be an optimist.
You're like 25%. No, you're like 75, 80% complete. That's
listen. Are
hey,
we talking about the
you
faults
right now.
Of society
no? I don't judge
right
any.
Now.
I don't judge anybody. Like I mean, you heard me say. Like I think some people are. You know, you take some responsibility for yourselves and your actions, and obviously there's some dependency. But at the end of the day, I don't judge. Frankly, I could care less if someone wants to sit themselves down, and I see them the Walmart motivators in their
view.
Carts. You know, and they're just kind of putting around, and then.
But, Walmart motivators. Yeah. I love that.
They're like 3 tons and they're in their motivator car, and that thing is probably got the best torque in the world
gosh,
to pull
yeah.
sort of weight. But I don't judge them. Like, yeah. Hey, dude, hey, look, that, you got your
like
one life to live.
To.
You so, want to live your life like that, then enjoy yourself.
The sad part is, though, I don't think that people want to, and people don't say, like, I aspire to be, you know, obese and
well,
have
do
diabetes.
So, I guess you can do, there's always. Something you can do, and there's been lots of people with heavier addictions that got themselves out of it because they've either one had the discipline and the fight within them to do it, or two, they found a support group to help them.
Support groups are huge. That's why my patients,
I
always push them towards like Weight Watchers or something like that,
because there's accountability.
The other thing I tell them
with others, and you work together and you accomplish something together, and there's a goal because you're doing it as a team.
I wish there was more education towards prevention. You know, like,
and I think we're getting
there. Starts in the schools.
Yeah,
you really got to start
because trying to convince. Because if you think about it. We are a world full of, or at least the, you know, Western world, full of just junkies. We are junkies as far as food goes. We're hopped up on sugar.
We are funny little apes, aren't we?
We're hopped up on some
hairless
form of sugar, you know? And I mean, do you remember, we don't remember, Mike, but you, Kevin, probably remember back when the
Kaiser?
Fat... back when the fat people, it was a symbol of royalty and oh, well, richness.
Yeah. I mean, long time ago. Yeah.
And now it's, unfortunately, that's just the way the shift has gone and the way.
Well, it's harder to get food then. But, so mm-hmm. if you were.
Yeah. Now fat is easier, more easily obtained by poverty. You know, the poorer you are, the poorer quality food you have, and the less education you have, and the less support around you you have. You're born, your mother and your father have type 2 diabetes. Your brother, you've seen the family of, you know, weight.
People don't realize either.
People, and it's like, how does that kid?
The other thing that's weird is people have begun taking pride in it.
And what, diabetes?
No, not diabetes, but being overweight.
Yeah.
A lot of celebrities. I mean, you can tell. And I hate to say this because, if you're overweight and you're comfortable in your body, then good for you. I'm not judging anyone, but I think it enables people to be okay with being obese. And then ultimately you have these problems like diabetes later. And, you know, you throw out names like Kelly Clarkson or some of those other ones who – and she's a big girl. I don't think she's obese, but it's not going to be too much longer if she continues down this road. Right. Hopefully I'm not sounding like a jerk.
I don't know.
No.
Kelly. I mean, I remember her.
Oh, on the thing. Clarkson.
But she's gained a lot
of weight. I met
her. She gains a lot of weight. And she's like, no, that's just who I am. I'm just a big girl. And it's like, well, not really. I mean, you're that way because you don't do anything physical. And you just eat a ton of food.
Well,
and
there's
you'll
also...
You'll have to look her up on the picture.
Yeah. She got bigger.
Yeah,
listen to us now. We're now
see, now I sound
TMZ.
Like the jerk. I don't want to sound like the jerk.
You're fat shaming Kelly Clarkson.
It's now normal. It's become normalized to be overweight. Yeah. Overweight is really no longer overweight. Obese is overweight, and I think there's a shift, and it's becoming normalized.
It's become one of those things can't discriminate.
I'm not trying to discriminate.
No.
I'm
not
looking at it as a health. Well, yeah, right.
People are taking pride in that I can be whatever I want to be. Well, sure you can.
Yeah, you can. But there's your consequences and repercussions to live in like that. Right. And I think that's the problem. But people are throwing that out the window, and they're normalizing being overweight. And the celebrities are they're enabling this because they're out there saying, "Hey, this is who I am. This is the way I want to be." And you get young kids are looking up to them, and they're doing the same thing. And Kelly Clarkson is just one of them that I bring up. And Christina Aguilera got big for a while, and she was saying the same things. And then I think, but she actually realized this is unhealthy, started working out again, and lost all the weight. And now she's thin. now she's fit again.
Who's the one that was married to Nick Lachey?
Jessica Simpson.
Jessica Simpson.
Chicken of the sea.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm not, again, I don't want to sound like some asshole, but the reality is we are now, we've become a country that's normalizing being overweight. So overweight is really no longer overweight.
Well, because it is the norm overweight. Now.
Right. And it's a problem, and it's only amplified by people with social influence.
Don't even get me onto the celebrity worship and all that.
Well, they influence society, and then the rest of us think, oh yeah, this is okay to be unhealthy, but they don't consider the consequences. What I'm trying to say is, people, you don't realize there's consequences and repercussions to living like this.
Right.
You're right. It is. If you want to live like that, that's fine. But appreciate that there's problems associated with it.
Well, and goes like back to the cigarettes. Social responsibility. You know, like gosh, it's so. So easy and comfortable and comforting for us to be like.
It's not comfortable to be 300 pounds. I mean, I hear the complaints, the knee pains, the back pains, the shortness of breath. There's that. And then there's the other thing, too, there's two things. You said society. Number one, if we eliminated obesity, let's say we got all the obese people down to overweight, 50% of the hospitals would close across the nation. Absolutely positive, 50% of the hospitals would close. Mm-hmm. So now you're taking the burden off society. So it is an issue of society. It's not, I mean, you can say, yeah, you know, I can do this for myself. I can eat whatever I want and be obese and have diabetes. But you're also taxing the system. And you might think, well, my grandfather, he lived to be 102 and he was 400 pounds. And well, that's great. He was an outlier. You're not going to be an outlier.
Right.
95% is who falls in the old bell curve, and you're not going to be an outlier. If you go to Vegas and I say you have a 95% chance on black or 5% chance on red, what would you put your money on? It's going to be the black. And if you have if you're 400 pounds, guess what? Diabetes, right. High blood pressure, all that, all those problems, and you're going to get sick. But the other caveat to that is, because we said it's not easy, is I always tell people, too, when they come in for a weight loss consultation, I say, number one, we're not losing weight for a wedding that's coming up in 2 weeks. We're not going to do that because you're not going to – it'll work. I could put you on medication. I can tell you to go Atkins and guarantee you in the next month you'll lose 20 pounds.
Yeah.
But then you'll put it right back on again. Yeah. So I always say, here's, give me a month. Give me 2 months of, first 2 weeks of writing down everything you do, everything you eat. Don't try to change anything. Just write it down. And then you take 2 weeks and you look. You just cut back a little bit here and there. You don't drink sugar. And the point of this is I try to say it took you 45 years to become obese. We're going to take 5 years, maybe 10 years to get you back into where you should be. Mm-hmm. And it's through that long process where you make the changes that you need to make and they actually stick because you're changing your lifestyle.
It's just
it's important. It's, yeah.
Me being the pessimist I am, it's just not the world that we are anymore.
Well, yeah.
Like more than 50% of marriages end up in divorce. We're just not a commitment world anymore. It's like... Who the hell wants to take five to ten years to do something?
I agree with you. Most of us aren't into committing. But then I also think the other thing is people get satisfied just sitting, like they get comfortable where they are. And you're right, being heavy and obese is not comfortable. But it becomes easy to live that life. And it becomes way more difficult to make any sort of significant change. And so they just fall themselves, they're in a rut. And it's just, you know what? It's just easier just to do this. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable sometimes when I sit or stand or walk too long.
And the 400
But it's just easier
pound,
just to keep running the way I am because I know it and it's simple.
Right. The 400-pound people who you see who are having like the real joint pain or who are, you know, having some of the bigger issues – like when you think about like being sedentary, that's kind of what you think about. You think of the bed bound people who you have to roll them over, you know, like, but just in general, generally we are an obese nation, definitely. And just, you know, in the world, there's a lot of obesity. And when you talk about being sedentary, just as a people, like we're very sedentary. Even if you don't have to lift us up and roll us over in our bed, just exercise is something that you do for fun.
What's happening?
All right, so I'm not really going to change subjects, but there is another group of people out there that have another answer to this whole situation, which I'll show you next, which is pretty interesting, actually. Mike, do you have anything new to add? What's coming up?
Oh, my situation. I wasn't prepared for this. I thought
He does every time. I don't know what to say.
Hey, anyways, guys, I'm creating a podcast called Mega to Double.
Get your notes out.
I don't need notes. This is what I do. We talk booze, spirits, history, mixology, the people and stories that make it great. We got a couple really great episodes that I'm working on right now. A moonshine episode, the art of craft beer episode. I have an outlaw motorcycle club episode.
Nice.
That's going to be pretty cool.
Where are you like embedding with them?
Yep. And it's a club called the Booze Fighters. They started in 1946.
Nice.
And it was all about drinking beer and riding motorcycles and getting crazy. A bunch of World War II vets that started.
Really? Where did you find them?
I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
I'll tell you about that later. So I got those guys. I'm still working on the Marine Corps episode. That one's causing me more problems than I thought. It's interesting because I was a Marine for a while, and we have a ton of really cool drinking traditions that I think people would find fascinating. But anyway, so that's it.
When can we expect your first episode?
I'm looking to get four or five of them produced before I publish, and I really am hoping by the end of the month. So 3 weeks. Today is July, some day in July, in the first week of July. I think about 3 more weeks, I should be able to I'm really pushing hard. So right, next cool. week I'm going to drive up to Virginia, talk to the motorcycle guys, try to get some Marines, and then I'm going to run around, talk to some bartenders, and talk some science about bartending. Like why cool. you should never shake a martini and why James Bond likes it shaken and not stirred.
Mm-hmm. That sounds cool.
But you'll have to wait for that.
Coming up. Terrific.
I hope we're still here. So, thanks for asking. I am... what I've been up to lately with the, you know, faded and shaded, or sorry, shaded and faded artist business website. Check me out on Facebook.
Where can they find you? Fadedandshaded.com? No.
Facebook.com/fadedandshaded.
Spell it out.
Shaded and faded.
Shaded and faded.
Yep. Spell it out. You can also look me up by Malia Christie, artist.
MalehCharistie.
Correct.
I have no idea how to spell it.
It's okay. Just go to my
phone.
Facebook.
It's a mess of letters.
So
mashed letters.
So I'll, you know, the big project I'm working on these days is the Wait What If podcast table.
This is gonna look really good. It's got glow in the dark on it and everything.
It looks really cool.
You guys are real excited about it.
I got
it.
Mic stands, the
really
ones
excited.
That they use.
I know. I'm stating fact. You're very excited about it.
You are a member of the Wait What If though now.
Hooray.
So it is partially your table. We'll have a mic that'll be just for you. It'll say mic on it.
made out of a huge reclaimed cable spool with a glow in the dark resin inlay.
Yeah, it's gonna look really good. And I got the professional mic stands coming where they're going to anchor in the middle and then they come up like this. You know, like they
man,
shoot music.
That's a real deal, man.
Kind of. I play one on TV. I was telling Mike today, I'm a PA. Like, that's my job, yet I just do that to buy equipment and feed the kids. My day is just consumed with podcasting and trying to get guests on. I try to go beyond the neighborhood and work my way to other folks. Okay, so the second part, as promised.
Many people find the very thought of insects disgusting, especially when they're in your mouth. But have you ever considered that insects could be more nutritious, environmentally friendly, and abundant than most other foods? Should we all be eating insects? Compare 100 grams of crickets to 100 grams of chicken, beef, or pork, and you'll find that they have comparable protein content, but crickets are much higher in essential vitamins and minerals such as calcium, zinc, and iron. Similarly, insects like mealworms are low in fat and contain large amounts of fiber. But that's not the only reason to incorporate them into your diet. Currently, there are 1.53 billion hectares of cropland and 3.38 billion hectares of pastures covering our Earth. Essentially, 38% of the land you see on a map is used for agriculture and farming. But where it takes 200 square meters of land to grow 1 pound of beef, it only takes 15 square meters to grow 1 pound of crickets. Furthermore, by 2025, it's expected that 1.8 billion people will live in areas with little to no fresh water. And yet, 70% of our fresh water sources are used in agriculture alone. To produce 1 kilogram of beef, it takes 22,000 liters of water, whereas 1 kilogram of pork takes 3,500 liters, and 1 kilogram of chicken takes 2,300 liters. But to make 1 kilogram of crickets, it only requires 1 liter of water. This is because insects can become fully hydrated just from the food that they eat. They're also more digestible. In fact, 80% of a cricket is edible and digestible compared to 50% of a chicken and 40% of cattle. And it's not like our mouths have never tasted insects before. For every 100 grams of spinach, 50 small insects like aphids, thrips, and mites are permitted. Peanut butter is allowed to contain roughly 30 insect fragments, such as heads, bodies, or legs per 100 grams. And even the hops used to make your favorite beer can contain 250 aphids per 100 grams. Yep, your summer beer may be spiked with a little more bug juice than you anticipated. So why aren't we eating insects? They're actually consumed in some parts of Asia, Latin America, and Africa. In fact, the capital of Congo has households eating 300 grams of caterpillars a week, which is 96 tons of caterpillars every year. But much of the Western world is used to screaming in disgust if they find a bug in their salad. This may be because Western culinary traditions have spawned out of colder climates with less insects, increased farming, and larger animals to eat. As Europeans began to colonize the world, they contextualized bug eating as savage and primitive because they observed many indigenous people doing it. Little did they know, bugs are actually extremely nutritious.
So, I mean, there's another answer for you. I mean, they market it pretty damn good. 80% of a cricket is edible versus, I don't remember what numbers they said for the cow, but it's not, it's like 20%, 25%. Yeah. I don't know what the number was.
It's
but I mean,
weird. I guess I would eat it. I'd probably eat it if it was like ground up, like ground beef, and then I could mix it in.
Yeah, and that's what,
or turn it into like cricket burgers or something.
Well, what they do, there's companies out there, and it's too dark out here for me to read these notes here, but there's companies out there that are like, all right, let's try this. It's cheap. It's, you know, high in protein, high in fiber. The problem is we don't like to eat bugs, obviously. Right. I personally don't. I was in seer school, I'd eat bugs, and I didn't really enjoy one bit of it. But now they make cricket flour. And so the idea there is take the bug away from it, turn it into a flour, and then consume that. And then there's some bars, protein bars that are made with bugs. But again, you don't see the legs and all that stuff
kicking around. Yeah, it's all kind of mashed up, and now it looks like something you're used to eating.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we eat lobsters.
The flour,
the
flour is what's tough. That's the thing that's most sociologically acceptable. Like, we're just like, oh, yeah, we could do that, cricket flour. But it's... actually, I mean, they've done studies saying that it may actually be more expensive.
Oh, the cricket flour?
Yeah.
It may be more expensive
to produce and have a bigger carbon footprint than...
cricket flour.
Than soy flour soy... Yeah, I think it's soy...
soy crops or whatever.
Soy flour and whatever the other two alternative grains are because they need more heat.
Oh, okay.
And that ends up using up, they need less water or whatever, but heating is, you know, what uses up.
Could
more
you grow
of
them in like a greenhouse or something?
Resources. Yeah, but you have to create the heat from that, and there wouldn't be enough heat just generated from the plants or manure or whatever. Who doesn't want to eat a bug now knowing that it was grown in manure? But that's the one that's most widely acceptable, but probably the least likely if we're trying to be resourceful.
What about just make some protein bars out of them? I mean, feed them to all their crunchies. I mean, I'd eat that stuff too.
I'd try it. Why not? I mean,
who cares? I'll eat whatever.
Hold the phones. Are there bugs in these little oatmeal cookies?
That's right. Actually, these are...
those are tasty.
I'll take another.
These are... Whoa! I thought the glass was coming.
No.
So, I mean, it's at least... I mean,
like six of those.
At least people are making the effort. You know, they're making the effort into trying things. And then in places of the world where there's going to be higher starvation, like in the along the equator, I mean, specifically the African continent. I'm thinking down here, what's along the equator? Peru? I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know South America. But wherever the poor countries are, people are going to be starving. And they eat bugs anyways. So they say,
Have you ever seen Bizarre Foods with, what's his name, Zimmerman?
Yeah, the little fat guy with the bald head. Yeah.
I used to love watching that. And I mean, like, the countries he travels to, it's widely prevalent. And in fact, the way they make some of them, you go to the open air markets and there's just all these dry roasted crickets
like bugs and stuff.
And it's like, well,
they're on skewers.
They're on skewers.
If you could stop trying to make it so, I don't know, just marketable, why not just grow a bunch of damn crickets and locusts? Locusts are one of the biggest delicacies since the existence of mankind. And aren't they kind of a problem? Aren't locusts a little bit of a growing problem?
Biblical plague.
Why don't we just dry roast them jerks and eat them?
Yeah, I mean, well, they say that if you get them out in nature that there can actually be a lot of issues. One, that they absorb pesticides.
I mean, I don't know if I want to eat bugs like I eat chips. That, like potato chips or anything.
You got to pull the wings off.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had mashed them up into something and I didn't recognize it, I'd probably be more prone to eat it. Or if you cut it up and put it in like a little sushi roll, I'd probably crush it.
Well, that was something I read in an article that
those little legs are creepy.
Before it became très chic, that was like the bug conversation used to be the sushi conversation. It was something that, you know, what is it? Gastronomy?
Gastronomy, yeah.
Gastronomers.
Yeah, those are people that like are on the cutting edge of foods. Yeah. Those are the people that will like, they'll make like a bubble and it'll be full of like some sort of food gas and you'll literally like suck in the bubble and that's your meal. It's
like
the most
foam.
Bizarre stuff, yeah.
Eat a tiny little little bite of, yeah. of you know, something, some bison sort of seaweed with some foam on top of it. Yeah, you're like, oh,
but they took it.
So good.
They take it and they like flash freeze it with nitrogen mm-hmm. and then like mm-hmm. break it on top of an egg and then you suck the whole thing down. And that's it's just bizarre stuff, but whatever. It's interesting.
We can do that, but we don't want to eat a bug.
Yeah,
but that's,
yeah, raw fish.
That's the thing. Yeah, raw fish. They go to these remote places, which are, I don't know, maybe like more of the pop, make up more of the population of the world than just us inside our little American bubble. And they bring raw fish and sashimi, and everyone's like, oh, darling, you must try it. Crickets are then going to be the new sushi.
You think it's going to get more popular?
No, but I do maybe. Think that oh. once we become the 9 billion, I think that if it comes down to, like Mike was saying, with the MREs.
Mike is just curled up with his microphone.
Hungry. And you're hungry. You'll eat a cricket.
I'm very comfortable now. I just hear go. A lot of noise.
Isn't this a lot better?
Yeah, this is the way it should be all the time.
Yeah. So what Mike's doing now, he went from sitting up with a mic stand to lying back on a chair.
It feels
with the
good.
Mic in his hand. Yeah, this is. Why do you think I give you guys the mic stands? I like to hold mine and kick back.
Yeah, this is so much better.
Mm-hmm. We got to do this broadcast out there in the, but it just hasn't been. We need to be under the fan right now because it's just
too
hot. Yeah,
yeah.
Sissies. I'm kidding.
So
if we do it around the fire pit, we gotta roast some crickets.
Yeah, we were out there. Remember that the night we were all out there, and yep. all the bugs are just running towards it. These roaches and. Just
they're
dumb,
running into the fire.
Animals. Yeah, they're like, oh, look at the beauty.
Look at it.
So, let's. I've been thinking about something on the metaphysical side of things, and let's end our podcast with this because that's what we do best, right?
Correct.
All right.
Indeed. We are telepathetic.
What happens if you know what a teleporter is?
Mm-hmm.
So they basically it deconstructs you. Deconstructs you at the atomic level and then reconstructs you on the other side with just borrowed atoms. So, like, it would almost be like you take a... Like, you're on the phone and I'm on a phone and we both have the same Legos kit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take my Lego kit apart and then you're over there and you put your Lego together and it looks exactly the same, but it isn't exactly the same. It's made up from different parts. So, if you teleport me from here to Mars... And I'm reassembled on the Martian surface. Who is that up there?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you believe that there's a consciousness or a soul,
yeah.
then deconstruction you at the atomic level,
mm-hmm.
then that's fine because what's really being transported through whatever wavelength is your consciousness, which is what you, who you are.
It's right? the information. So that, it's like the, yeah. the data is being transferred.
Yeah, the data.
Like this blue
it's
eyes,
you.
Red
it's your
hair.
Personality. It's what makes you you. It's your. I guess some people would call it a soul.
Bizarre.
You can call it your consciousness.
Like Chappie.
That is sent somewhere. Yeah, like a Chappie. I guess.
Did you see it?
I still yeah. haven't seen it.
No, oh,
but I'm going to agree with you calling it like
maybe
that.
Maybe like it. No, I don't know. That's
but then, do you remember the end of Chappie?
That's more of an AI type thing.
But
yeah.
he downloads his consciousness into the robot.
Well, we're talking about teleporting, where it's like a physical
well,
teleporting.
I think it's similar because you take your consciousness, you're shooting it across to some other location, and instead of being put back into the same physical thing that you are, it borrows atomic things and it reconstructs you.
You, yeah.
And
so
then now, but you're the same. What makes you you? But the physical part of you. Is different.
But here's the thing, you would never know because like you would right. ask that person and be like, are you really Kevin? And they'd be like, yeah, I am. But
well,
are
you
they
are
really?
Though. Well, yeah, because what makes, because your body isn't really anything.
But are you really like, right. or do you just like, does it just go black for you and then something else that looks like you and talks like you, the lights turn on
Have
and
you
there's
read
a
the
disconnect?
Article?
I don't think so. I think it's you. But astral projection I think is where you take your consciousness and you're in a dreamlike state and you can actually travel to other locations and have real experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you're able to do it is because you leave your physical form and it's just your consciousness that goes off. And that's what makes you you. The physical you doesn't mean anything. That's just going to decompose someday anyway. There's this consciousness or this soul that exists independent of your physical body.
You know those things
that... It's just tied to it now because it's part of life.
Do you know those things that, like, they have, like, I think they're, like, little filaments, and they come up, and they make a sphere, and there's a light. You can get them at, like, toy stores or whatever. There's a light
yeah.
inside, and then the tips of those filaments glow, and you can move your hand around and they glow. Mm-hmm. Do you think that existence is, and I guess each of our consciousness are the tips of those little filaments that are light, and everything that we see, time, space, our whole dimension, is really, it's just the illusion of the tips of those filaments, just the light that we see. And really, the true reality is deep within there. And then if you cut away the filament, the light at the end of that stops, but it still continues down. It's the same light. It's all the same. So you take another example would be...
I'm trying to picture your light filament thing. And I'm
so have you ever seen it? It almost looks like a disco ball.
I thought
ball.
I did.
Yeah. So like picture like a broom with all the bristles are in one little tight spot, but they're very floppy and they move around. They're clear.
And it looks like it's in a big like snow globe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the light comes into it, and then you know the tips of like you take a tube.
It's almost like a fiber optic.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like the ends that are lit, and then Yeah, I think I'm tracking.
So you cut away all that, but still
you're a damn tracker.
Deep inside is the light, and that's really what connects everything. So we look around and we see dark matter and we see consciousness and we're like, what is going on? And then really what we don't realize is that when the lights go out and your filament's clipped, you just go inside to the reality of what it all is. And
yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it.
I do too. Well, like I've said before, like energy. I think we're all just energy, but I do feel like if my physical body gets clipped off, I still feel like I'm still my personal unique energy. I'm still here. I'm still floating around. Like I don't just become like nothing or just get absorbed into whatever. That, I still think that I'm still energy that's here.
I think so. I think we're all connected. I think the physical form is something that's just temporary.
Don't you think
we talked about it a little bit last time with at least I think I did with the collective consciousness that makes up what the universe is, and that's really what, in my mind, that's really what God is. It's this whole collective of knowledge, and we're all connected like those filament things. So when this body dies, you go right back to it, and then maybe you come back down
to the source.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty cool. I'm not going to lie to you. If the lights go out and there's nothing, I guess it doesn't matter anyways because you're not going to know.
Yeah, huh?
But still, it kind of sucks. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the collective consciousness kind of feel, or at least belief, that we're all, I feel positive and okay, like warm and fuzzy about even if the lights go off, knowing that feeling like if we can all, it doesn't matter like God or what their God or, you know, whether we're here in this physical state or whether we're in a chip somewhere or what have you. Like, I like if we could all just believe that, if we could all just believe. I think that if we could just believe that we are.
I believe I can fly.
What? If you can just believe that despite your body or despite what everyone else tells you or your weight or your poverty or your anything, what you're born into or what, how you die or what have you, if you can believe that no matter what happens or what anyone tells me, I am here and I'm part of existence, you know, and that you can't take that away from me, I think that then you've won. I think it's hard to do that though.
Okay, but no, that was a good thought, Malia. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Mike has something.
One more.
Mike has his hand raised. Mike,
this is going to be. Hello, I'm here. If you
please, sir, may I have
another?
More?
But for the guy that you're going to get later, and he talks about his 14 previous life experiences.
I mean, yeah, we can talk about him. I just don't want to make
light of it
because it is a strange topic.
This is similar to this collective consciousness, and you end your life, and then who you are gets sucked back into the thing.
What Mike is talking about for the listeners is that I have a potential guest that's coming on that is a astral projectionist. Am I saying that right?
I don't really know because there's a lot going on in that email.
Yeah.
so there's a lot. He has a lot going on.
Let's just say he's in the realm of the metaphysical guru, and I'd like to bring him on because he's got a lot of interesting stuff that we talk about that we touch upon. And, it's just interesting. So Mike is talking about him right now.
I really want to hear what he says because I don't know if you remember from last week when I was talking about the voodoo stuff.
Yeah.
one of the voodoo things, I didn't go into much of it, but he told me that I had three past lives and I'm currently living in my fourth.
Really?
Yeah. So when I read that, I was like, well, that's kind of strange, because this guy, he was like, I'm able to tell. And he laid out all these examples of why there were three past lives, and two of them have a huge influence in this current one, mm-hmm. and one of them really doesn't. But yeah. He goes, I'll explain to you later, because it would take too long. But it was insane, the connections that he drew with that. Remember, because I remember when I was telling you, he told me all about myself.
Yeah.
He was like, these lives did this to you, and that one did this to you, and that's why you experience these different things growing up. So you guys look at me like I'm some freak.
Did you take Ambien?
Not yet. I'm going to crush it up and pour it in my whiskey and slam it. I'm not going to do that. Don't.
Yeah, I'm going to find you outside my house, curled up with a bush. What's he doing?
I definitely will.
George, why are you here? Get it?
You don't need that guy from the email.
I don't understand the reference.
I
said curled up with a bush, and I said, George, why are you here?
Of the jungle?
George Bush.
George Bush.
I said, I'm going to find you on the front lawn.
Womp, womp.
See, the worst thing is when you have to explain a joke, you just. So.
Unless you over-explain. You can get it. You see what I did there?
See how I did it?
See how that works?
George.
I'm tracking.
The Ghost Hunter episode was pushed back a little bit, but it's okay. We're still going to get it. We're going to go on our ghost hunting. We're getting a lot of really cool guests. We're getting a, I've been in talks with a local, I think he's up in Raleigh, author who writes true crime novels, so it'd be great to talk with him. I also have a group that, if you've heard of, there's a documentary out there called, I believe it's called Tiny. It's just Tiny. It's about people that live in like 100 square foot homes and everything, and this guy builds these houses, and I don't know a lot. I've been in contact with them, so we're going to talk with him. And then I think there was another one that we were working on. Oh, Paul's going to come back on. We're going to discuss with the philosopher free will.
A real philosopher. I want to be around for that one.
That's going to be in August.
Don't we always end up somehow segueing into that?
Yeah, yes. That's going to be a good one. Because he said that's a specialty, so we're going to talk with him. Oh, no. What's that noise?
He's in a tree.
First of all, I'd like to thank the clips I got today. One was from Time Explains, and that was the one about the test tube meat. Second one is ASAP Science, or ASAP Science on YouTube, for their clip on the bugs. What do we got? Make It a Double podcast will be coming out in August.
Sooner
at some
or later.
Point. We'll figure out when it's going to come out. We'll
when
keep
I get
you
around
updated,
to it.
Keep you updated on
and
that.
And the table's coming out sometime too soon.
Yeah, and Malia's table will be coming up. We'll take a picture of it, and we'll put it on the Facebook page, which you can find, coincidentally, at facebook.com/WWI Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at WWI Podcast. Anything else? I always forget something. Oh, and our email address, which I've only gotten one email. Hey, people, drop me an email line, especially my friends out in Australia or Great Britain or Kazakhstan that are apparently listening to this show. It's a waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Also, if you do me a favor, this would help us out tremendously, and I don't know why I can't get my listeners to do this. Go to iTunes and click on the review and give us a review, preferably 5 stars, and say how wonderful we are. Have you done a review yet, Mike?
I'm doing it right now.
Why can't I give you a little bit?
I was on the spot. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We're going to try to get people click on. I'll even put the link on there and everything. All you have to do is click and go, well, whatever amount of stars you want to give. But if you're giving me 1 star, kiss my ace.
We give good reasons for 1 stars, though.
Yeah, I guess if you give a reason why
we're
1 star.
If there's good critique, then I think that's...
Well, if there's good critique, send me an email if there's a good critique. Don't hurt my feelings on iTunes. That's right. Just be like, hey, ass clowns, you're...
Fix this.
I hate it when you talk. Can you please not do that anymore?
I'll give you 5 stars as long as you do everything that I suggest.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Mike, tell me what's going on.
We're about to blow stuff up. We've been drinking all day, and now we're going to blow stuff up.
Absolutely. A little alcohol and explosives. This is what
I thought it was George of the Jungle.